Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to another program in the award-winning series of Listen to Older Voices. This week, part one of a two-part program with 70-year-old Rod Young. Rod starts by reliving his very early years, years with his father away fighting in World War II, years when almost everything is rationed. Rod shares a story about how he played street football with two boys who would later become legends in the North Melbourne Football Club, which was then in the VFL. While Rod, he was snapped up by Collingwood. Having decided that as his dad had been skilled with his hands, he'd do a trade, he enrolls at a tech school and ends up doing his apprenticeship with his father, who was at that time a builder. We also learn how this led him to take up a career in drafting. Rod also shares stories about his experiences in 1956 in what was then known as the 98-day National Service and why he ended up spending 7 years in the services. But to tell his story, here's Rod. First of all, Rod, thanks very much for inviting me into your home. And I'd like to start by asking you when you were born and where you were born.
Born in 1938 in July. And I was born in Albert Park and early years lived in a little place called Russell Street in Prahran.
Well, what are your earliest memories?
It was a very difficult space and time because of the war years and everything else. So being born in 1938 and war declared in 1939 officially, my father worked at Brighton May in Prahran making matches, funnily enough. It's no longer there, it's all gone now. But he went away to the Second World War, and of course my mother was left with myself. So my earliest years were pretty difficult because there was a lot of coupon rationing as far as general food, meat, butter, salt. Well, not so much salt, but certainly all the other normal commodities you get these days. We had to produce ration coupons to get food, and it was pretty restricted as far as how you could live.
I imagine it would have been difficult. That would have been Mum's job, because Dad was at war, wasn't he?
That's right, and Mum did a fantastic job. She, probably in the vicinity of 24 right. years of age, so, yeah, it was a pretty traumatic sort of experience, and she brought me up.
Were you the only child?
At that stage, I was the only child, yes. I had two sisters later on after the war, but prior to the war, yes, I was the only child, so I'm the oldest in the family, yeah.
Dad, this would have been very difficult for you losing your dad at such a young age, in terms of him not being there. Did that have an effect on you?
I didn't really appreciate the situation at the time because of the age, because I was only around about, what, 2, 3, 4 years of age. So, and I relied on my mother, you know, very heavily. I also had other associated, not so much family, some part of family, but also close friends of Mum and Dad's, so, you know,
it... It was like an extended family then, was it?
Yeah, it was, during those years, yeah. And, of course, everything was restricted in those days. Motor vehicles were very limited because of the fuel. Most deliveries were done by horse and cart. And it's funny, I revisited the old street that I was basically, in the early years, brought up, and it's very narrow. It's only capable of taking one car or one horse and cart or whatever, you know. So, yeah, it was quite an experience, actually.
Well, were any of the old houses from your time still there?
Yes, there's... we lived in a rented sort of a duplex-type accommodation, and both of those units are still there. The rest of the area has been completely redeveloped, so... Mm. But I had a look at that about 10 years ago, 11 years ago. I haven't been back there since.
As the years went on, you would have got to school age. What school did you go to first?
Okay, my first school was... I did grades one only. I went to a Seventh-day Adventist school, which was close at hand because it was in walking distance, and I spent what used to be year one, I suppose. No, it was grade one, but now year one. And then from there, when Dad returned from the Second World War, we looked at other channels. So I was probably in Prahran for, I suppose, 4 years or thereabouts. And I didn't go to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I went to the St. Paul's Church in Prahran and sung in the choir. And
you had a good voice then,
Bible
did you?
Studies. Oh, I used to have a good voice, not now. No, it's all gone now.
So Mum wasn't a Seventh-day Adventist, obviously.
No, it was just convenient. But that was the only closest primary type school that was available. Yeah.
Your years in primary school, did you enjoy them?
Not so much at the in the early years, but certainly in primary, once we moved out to West Brunswick. Yes, I did.
Did you have many friends at school?
Limited number.
What sort of things did you do in your spare time with your friends?
Well, there wasn't a lot to do because everybody was scattered all over the place, and I used to spend a lot of time in the parks and, you know, playing a little bit of ball skills and that sort of thing. I had a Cyclops car. Because of the fuel situation, my uncle built a what they call a gas producer, which is the alternative of fuel in those years while the rations were on. And I used to pedal this little car down to the park and play around down there. But that was basically outlet. I didn't have a lot of friends. I had friends, not close friends, put it that way, mm-hmm. at that early age.
The years go on and Dad comes home at the end of the war.
Yep.
Do you remember that?
Yep.
What reaction did it have with this man coming back into your life?
I'd seen him when he'd been back on leave, because everything was done by ship. It wasn't done by aircraft.
No.
So it took time to get there and back. And when he came back, of course, you know, I had a father at long last, which I didn't understand.
That's right.
So there was quite an adaption. But it was very difficult getting work in the early days after the war ceased. My father went back to Brighton May, which was the original job that he had prior to the war, and worked as a maintenance carpenter in the whole of the area. He was very good with his hands and quite talented, actually. But he spent, I think he had a couple of leaves during the war when he came back home. But he spent time in Europe and Jerusalem and Syria.
Did he ever talk about those war years?
Yeah, he, not in a lot of detail. He was only a signalman, finished his career as a sergeant, but he got a few mentions in dispatches that came back from his particular groups. So he was pretty reliable, I would say. Then he came back into the South Pacific area and ended up in Bougainville.
Well, that wasn't a very pleasant area, was it? No.
He was attached to an artillery regiment, which was formed here in Victoria, actually. But he didn't like war, which is interesting. He contributed in the way he could to save lives of his own close people, you know, within the forces. So, but he didn't like war, same as I don't.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
Now, I believe as a boy, and I'd like to find out how this came about, that you used to play street football or park football with Noel Teasdale and Alan Aylett. How did you know that? We have our ways and means.
Yeah, I did, actually. I played when we moved as a family to West Brunswick. Noel Teasdale lived round the corner from me, and of course Alan Aylett used to come over and kick a football, and I would have only been around about 10 years of age, I suppose, at that stage. So, well, that was quite an experience.
Were they much older than you?
Not that much, actually. Probably 5, maybe 6 years older.
Okay.
No, it would have been, I probably would have been around about 12, I suppose, at that stage, yeah. So they were in their early years of what used to be Victorian Football League then.
So they were actually playing for North Melbourne at that stage?
Yeah, they started in the juniors and, of course, then graduated through, and Alan Aylett became a doctor or a doctor of medicine, president of the club, and so it went on, captain of the side, and so it went on from there. But I always remained in contact with them because they were my first sort of insights into sport in principle.
Right.
Yeah. There wasn't much else to do except play street football.
Did you ever end up supporting the North Melbourne Football Club?
No. Later on in years, while I was doing architecture at RMIT, I joined the local football team there. I also was snapped up by Collingwood, funnily enough, because I'd always followed Collingwood right through. I played five games with the what used to be the Colts of the under-19s and went down to Cadinia Park and got my head smashed in, and I thought, this is too rough for me, so I gave it away.
But you still did it. You still did it.
That
was quite an achievement. Yeah, I mean, there'd be a lot of young men these days would give their eye teeth to play a few games for the football club.
Particularly what is now a history club. I call it the history club.
Yes.
One of the originals.
Did you go to secondary college or high school?
Just before I get to that, while I was at North Brunswick Primary School, which has been completely redeveloped, it was quite amazing. I went out there about 3 years ago to have a look, because in the final sixth grade or year six, I was the, I don't know what you call it, prefect, senior, captain, or whatever you call it. In fact, I've still got the badge here from the school. But I went back to get records, and they couldn't locate any records at all. Apparently, they had a fire at some stage through the school, and a lot of the records were destroyed, so it was a bit disappointing. Yeah. Mm. But anyway, from there, I did my first year at South Melbourne Technical College, and I had to jump a tram to, or two trams actually, to get down to South Melbourne to go to school, two down and two back each day. But that was only for 12 months, and it was a trade school. It's now been replaced by the Aquatic Centre. It's been demolished and replaced by the Aquatic Centre.
Well, did you have any mind to do a trade?
Yeah, well, my father was very, as I said, handy with his hands and liked working in wood, metals and this sort of thing. So I sort of followed that trend, certainly influenced by him because of just watching him, you know, how he did things and that sort of thing. Then when we moved from West Brunswick, funny little snippet of information, to earn pocket money, because pocket money was pretty rare. That's interesting. We, in West Brunswick, we had a dairy which had stables and all the rest of it out the back, and it had its cool rooms, and Dad used to do a milk round with horse and cart.
Oh, okay.
And to earn money at weekends, while I wasn't at school, I'd get up at something like 2 o'clock in the morning and go out delivering milk around the whole of the Brunswick area. So that was quite an interesting...
Did you enjoy doing that, or did you just do it for the money?
I did it to keep fit. Yeah, the money played was only very minimal. I mean, it might have been the equivalent of 50 cents for the weekend, you know. It was because wages were pretty low at that stage. But, I enjoyed it. I tell you what, it got me fit, or kept me fit, which was quite good.
So you only went 1 year to South Melbourne Tech. Then what happened?
Then we had to move out of the property or the dairy in Brunswick, and Dad was able to get an ex-serviceman's housing loan, which was pretty reasonable. So we ended up moving out to Bentley East, and the house was under construction at the time, hadn't been completed. But I think the house at that stage through the housing loan was something like £2,600 odd pounds, you know, which compared with housing these days, is pretty minimal.
Oh, but it was expensive ridiculous. At that stage. Yes. Yeah. Well, that's right. As you pointed out, wages were low. So.
Oh, yeah. Dad, when he came back from the war, couldn't get full-time work. So what they did, they scheduled. He worked, I think, 2.5 days a week. And then somebody else took the job for the rest of the time.
Yes.
So it was basically pretty restricted as far as what work you could get financially. But anyway, we ended up getting this housing loan and or Dad got the housing loan and we moved out to Bentley East and we were there for many years. In fact, I completed the rest of my schooling at a place called Oakley Technical College, which is no longer there. Like most places, it's been demolished, but and there's a housing estate there. And I did my senior years up until year 10. So it was basically a trade school, and I got involved in woodworking and all that sort of thing while I was there.
Did you at this stage, had you started to think about what it was you really wanted to do?
I didn't know.
Okay.
I wasn't sure. I knew I had to work with my hands.
Yeah.
And I love working in timber.
Right.
So at the end of the schooling at Oakley Tech, I decided to apply and get an apprenticeship. Funnily enough, my father was a builder at that stage, so I did my apprenticeship with him. And I went back to school, I think, 3 or 4 half days a week or something like that.
Is this around about 1955-ish, would it be?
Well, I moved to the Tech 1950, so 52, would have been 53, 54. I did my apprenticeship still at the Tech because they had an apprenticeship school or an apprenticeship section at the school at Oakley Tech. And it was too heavy and hard going, lifting lumps of timber all over the place on my shoulders. And I thought, no, there's got to be something better than this for me.
Yes.
Listen to older voices, revisiting through recollections.
So anyway, I was fortunate enough to win a scholarship to what used to be Melbourne Technical College. This would have been in about 54. And I spent 2 years at Melbourne Technical College. Flunked the second year because I wasted my time and did stupid things as a teenager.
You would have been, what, going on 17, 18 here? This is...
No, I'm about 16,
16.
17.
Is that 16,
yeah,
17?
Yeah. So...
Was this because you were starting to see there was a bigger world out there? There's lots of social things going on, or...?
Yeah, socially things were changing. There's no doubt about that. And certainly a bigger world. And it's something that, as I said, I took after my father as... good with my hands. I did a lot of sketching and drawing and all this sort of thing. So that sort of led me towards architecture. But of course, after flunking the second year, I couldn't afford to carry on the scholarship, so I had to pay for it myself. And that's where it became very interesting, because I thought, well, what am I going to do? Anyway, I met a young lady who was doing an arts course at the Tech, and got involved with her, and her father was an architect. And I thought, well, maybe I can put the squeeze on him and try and get a job.
Fair call.
to pay for the course. But the funny part about it was, it took me 6 months. I had to pay him £5 a fortnight to get basic training. What it allowed me to do was at least go to night school and continue on the course. Anyway, it took me 12 years to get through the course because I had to do it part-time. So I was working during the day and I graduated through the ranks with different firms and that sort of thing, and did pretty well, where I went from sort of a trainee draftsman, junior draftsman, then to a senior draftsman. And I ended up down the track after a few years becoming an office manager of a architectural firm in Melbourne. in the centre of Melbourne.
Well, that's a few years we've jumped here, so we might just pull you back a bit and then bring up your experiences as a draftsman, and particularly as an office manager. 1956, you got caught up in national service.
Yes, I...
Was that willing?
No, I had an option. It was the last of the, what used to be the 98-day course in military training. It was only a basic course, but what happened was I had the option to either continue the course that ended up as Royal Melbourne Technical College, to do the course and continue on, or face doing national service down the track. And I thought, well, let's get it over with. So I went in and did the last of the 98 day. That was 1956.
What was that experience like?
Eye-opening.
Share, come on.
Okay. Because of my upbringing, I'd sort of been on my mother's apron strings to a certain extent. I'd had limited experience in the outer world. So I thought, well, I've got to do it, so I might as well do it now. So I did it, and it was quite an experience. It was certainly very regimented. It was very instructional. In fact, it was interesting the type of people that you were billeted with, because I was in an engineering squadron, if you like to call it that, and I had a guy sleeping, because we slept in bunk rooms, and I had a guy in the bed opposite me that was a street fighter, pub brawler, whatever you want to call it.
Quite the opposite to you, yes.
And yet, he was a tremendous guy. And yes, you certainly learn a lot. Yeah. And I think why they cut national service out, I don't know, but they should. It still should be there, because I think it would create or overcome a lot of the problems that we've got, you know, teenager-wise and everything else. But anyway, that's only an opinion. I ended up spending 7 years in the services.
Sorry, how did that come about? Because if national service was only 98 days, how did you...
You still had to do 2 fortnightly camps for the next 2 years. So I thought, well, I'm getting interested in this. I may as well keep going. So I got into signals, which my father was in, funnily enough, and I ended up getting out of the army after 7 years as a sergeant.
Same as dad,
which is quite interesting, actually. But mainly in the reserves. I was in a light plant operating squadron, driving dozers and graders and all this sort of thing, and front end loaders and trucks. It's funny how the army system works. I ended up with 15 licenses.
Goodness me.
For different vehicles that you were allowed to drive. And because you had to have a license for every vehicle. But the funny part about it was, we used to maintain roads, culvert crossings, airport maintenance, all this sort of thing on airstrips. And when Sukarno started to play up, I was attached to 3 Field Engineering Regiment, which was a branch of 21 Construction, base at Pakapunyal, which was a plant squadron. And 20 of us were scheduled as reservists to go and try and sort Sukarno's problems out. Anyway, I had my injections, I was issued with all the kit and everything else, and 2 days before we were due to leave, the army pulled the plug and set the regulars up there. So,
were you deflated over that or pleased?
No, I was pleased. I even though we would eventually be issued with a sidearm. That was the only firearm that we held.
Yeah.
But I don't think I could kill anybody or anything like that. I don't believe in it. But all I was there to do was a job.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's what I was scheduled to do. But it didn't occur.
Yes.
So I missed out on my housing loan from the government. But anyway, that's all history now.
1956, certainly 58, into the early 60s.
Yeah.
Around Melbourne, there were lots, and every town hall, every little hall had a dance. Did you go to many of those Saturday night, Sunday
dances?
Yes,
I used to go to the, there was a dance at, I don't know, it was called the Palladium Centre, I think, in Paran. I used to go there, and down to the, I think the Palais had a dance area in St Kilda.
Mm.
There were a few around, but being limited because I had no transport at that stage.
Of course.
I got my licence, but I didn't have, have enough money to buy a vehicle. So, yeah, it was pretty restrictive. But, yeah, we used to take public transport, the trams and the trains and everything else. And
it was a very social thing, wasn't it?
I mean, oh, yeah, very much so, it. Particularly yeah. to meet people.
Girls?
Of course. Of course, yeah. That always happens.
What about your first car? What was it and when did you get it?
It was an FX Holden, a 1949, I think it was.
A sturdy vehicle.
Yeah, the original model with the vertical grille, had vinyl upholstering, and I was an idiot driver. Took risks, which a lot of the local teenagers do nowadays. How I didn't kill myself, I'll never know. I had a blowout on retread tyres on the front, and which nearly rolled the vehicle, coming back from where the penguins are.
Off Phillip Island. Cowes,
Phillip Island, yeah.
Join Rod and myself next week for the final part of his story. On what a story, which includes his move to West Australia, setting up his own business, becoming a state and later national swimming referee, a member of the Board of Control of the West Australian Swimming Association, a member of the West Australian Cliff Rescue Unit, a controller with the State Emergency Services, and believe it or not, a lot more, which includes adventures in Burma. Next week, the final part of the life and times of Rod Young on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.